You started your music career as a summer camp counselor.
Yeah, I went to I kind of started writing songs in college and like and towards the end of my high school years. And the first summer of college, I went to work at a summer camp. I ended up working at the summer camp like 3 summers. But I was like the guy who played guitar in the summer camp. So in between like playing Wonderwall and playing I'm Yours by Hitches and Brass, I would like slip in one of my songs. And kids would be like, oh, who sings that? And I'm like, oh, that's me. And they'd be like, so I had those songs in my SoundCloud. So when we came back from summer and like along the summer, the kids would ask me to like, start playing my songs, and I thought that was really cool. And then when I went back home from summer, the kids just started like sharing the SoundCloud recordings that I have that I did on my phone. So that's how like I kind of had my first like I would say break, but it's not really a break. But the first time people that I didn't know started knowing about my music. For some reason, I just like started writing songs, and I really got like hooked into that, into writing songs rather than learning other people's songs. And I think that's kind of the way I started practicing. And I wouldn't say I wrote a song every day, but I definitely wrote a song every week. So I think, and I was like posting them on SoundCloud. Even if you check my SoundCloud today, I still have all those old songs that are like, they're just home recorded in my laptop.
You can basically call them the summer camp sessions, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's really.
I can release like a bootleg album one time. Yeah, maybe that's a good idea. Just you gave me a really good idea.
Go ahead, take it. I give you the rights. So before that, where would you like, you know, just kind of get your influence from music, or where did it all start? Did your parents or your grandfather play any music, or you just kind of picked it up on your own?
I kind of picked it up on my own. I had a bunch of friends in school back in Venezuela. I moved from Venezuela when I was 15. So, like, those last 2 years when I was living in Venezuela, I had a bunch of friends that started playing guitar, and they were really good. And they were, like, into, like, heavy metal and that kind of stuff. And that's when I started, like, learning about different bands and, like, listening to different bands. But I wasn't playing yet. And one time I went to a party, and, like, we just started jamming. And, like, one of my friends started, like, teaching me Smoke and Water. And I was hooked right away. And then my brother had an old guitar. And I picked that guitar up, started, like, learning on my own. And then I went to some classes, but the teacher wasn't really a nice guy, so I quit the classes, and like I already had been in the classes for like a year, so I had a good base. And that's when I really started. I never stopped playing, and I joined a couple bands in Venezuela, and then I moved to the U.S., Miami, and that's when I really started to write songs at my own style, you know. In the beginning, when I was a kid and I played in those bands, I would play only guitar. Like, it was very indie rock and very, like, heavy metal and that kind of stuff. And now I, like, developed into my own acoustic sound when I was alone in my room in the U.S. And that's how kind of everything started for me.
That's really cool. And you mentioned you were from Venezuela. How was that, like, in ways of developing your own sound and everything? Do you take some influence from Venezuela, or you just kind of separate the two?
Oh yeah, a lot. I mean, like, when I was growing up there, there was this local scene that is now like a very international scene. There were bands like Rawayana and Los Mesoneros, and they're like bands that are like traveling all across Latin America right now and Europe. And those, they were like local bands, and I really like looked up to them because they were making music in Spanish that really sounded cool. And, like, for me, that was something that, like, for me, music in Spanish was, like, what my parents listened to, you know? And now there's these guys that are making, like, cool music in Spanish, and I thought that was really interesting, and I really wanted to emulate that. And that's basically the reason why I started writing songs in Spanish.
That's really cool, and especially because I was seeing that you've been called the Latin Jack Johnson. How do you feel about that?
I mean, I love Jack Johnson. He's actually one of my biggest influences. So I think that's great.
Yeah, that was the vibe from your first album, which you released last year, Ciclo, no?
That first album had like most of those songs that I used to play in the summer camp. So when I got to record them, they were songs that I had 4 years prior to recording the album. So I was kind of like, I don't want to say bored, but like, it wasn't me, you know? Like, it wasn't me at that time. And when I ended up releasing the album, it was almost a year after, so the songs were old. So I really wanted an album for this second, for Mujer Eléctrica. I really wanted an album that, like, captures who I am right now or who I've been in this past year.
Is that why you changed from acoustic to electric?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, when I started touring the first album, I kind of had to put together a band to play those songs because they're very acoustic, but they still have other instruments. So that started giving, like, I started, like, getting used to having a band and having, like, a deeper sound. So when I started writing songs, I would take them to the band. We would, like, put them together. In the first album, the songs went from my bedroom to the studio. And this second album, songs went from my bedroom to the rehearsing, then to the actual studio, you know? So it was kind of like the band was like the filter of the songs, and that's why we kind of like developed into a more, I don't want to say rock sound, but a more guitar sound.
Yeah, it can definitely sense a heavier tone in your new album. But your single, Pienso, that one's more of a lightlier song. I really liked it. It was definitely fun, and the music video for that is even funnier.
Yeah. And that song, it's a funny story because that song is actually very old. One of it, like, I had that song, like, stored there for some reason. It was on my phone, and one day I listened to it, and I started playing it, and someone said, like, hey, that's a cool song. Is that new? I was like, no, that's, like, a year old. And then they just said, like, oh, you should release it. And then I started thinking about it, and I showed it to the band, and they really liked it, and then I was like, damn, I guess I have to play it now. And we put it on the album, but it's actually a very old song.
Oh, wow. So even, like, during your summer camp days?
Yeah, man. For some reason, I didn't think about the song when I did the first album, but it just, like, resurfaced. And then here it is in my second album. And it's been, like, one of the biggest ones so far.
Well, I could say it's a hit. I really liked it. The music video is just, like, perfect for that type of song, too.
Thank you, man. I did it with a friend who goes to Risby. It's the art school in Rhode Island, and he's pretty crazy, and we had this idea for a long time, and we finally got to do it.
Yeah, it's so awesome. I really like the edits of, like, between yourself and yourself.
the transitions, yeah, they're pretty cool.
All right, so let's take a listen to Pienso from your new album, and so I would, like, edit that part out.
Awesome, yeah.
Okay, and then we come back into it. So yeah, that was Pienso. It's really one of your light songs. It's very upbeat and everything compared to your other songs.
The sound we tried to go for, it was a very, like, originally the song we wanted it to be very, like, Whitest Boys Alive kind of sound. It ended up being a lot more pop and a lot more longer, but I think it remains that that vibe remains, and the simplicity of the song goes very straight to the point. It's very square. It goes from the verse to the chorus and doesn't even have a bridge. So I think that was, like, kind of the thing we were going for.
Nice. And then what was your major influence for Mujer Eléctrica?
Man, that's a good question. We had a lot of influence, but I think what we were listening to when we were recording, we did a lot of, like, the Beatles, and very Harvest Moon by Neil Young, and a lot of, like, Rubén Blades. There's a song called Semilla. It's Rubén Blades, very Rubén Blades that has, like, that storytelling idea. And we have a lot of influences, but, like, I would say mostly those three.
Do you take a lot of for this album? Do you take a lot of influence? I know it's. Are most of the love songs also about Venezuela?
No, I mean, most of the songs are really just about my life and the relationship that I have. And talking about Venezuela, I've been away for so long that sometimes I feel like I don't have the real knowledge of what it is to be there, so I don't think it's fair for me to talk about something that I'm not really living as other people are. So I think that when I'm ready, and it's very hard to write, like, a political song, you know, or that kind of stuff. And I think that when I'm ready, as a writer, I think I'm going to do it because I really want to, but I really want to do it in the best way possible. And for me, like, writing love songs, it's what I like to do. It's really what comes natural, and I think it's a good distraction, you know, and it's also, you don't have to write a love song or a political song in order to make other people feel good, and I think writing a love song is, it's like making people feel good about something, and a love song doesn't have necessarily have to be about a person. It can be about something else and the way you interpret it. So that's, I think, the beauty about love songs is that they make people feel good, and they make people remember what they love or who they love or whatever it is that they love.
Yeah, that's very true, because when I was listening to your songs, it's, yeah, I felt like this type of relief in the sense of, like, letting my life, or just listening to your lyrics and letting my life just kind of get stuck in those lyrics.
Yeah, it's like you kind of find a way to relate to them, and I think when I was writing the album, I thought, like, oh, this is, like, too personal. Then you remember how alike humans are, that even the most personal things about one person can really be relatable to other people. And you think that they wouldn't, but they actually are. We all go through the same kind of things.
And then how about your next song, Brisita de Fe? Would you tell me a little more about that song?
Yeah, Brisita de Fe is, like, it's one of the prettier songs that I think there are on the album. And it's a song about, like, finding something after going through a really tough time or a really stressful time. It's like finding this person that makes you realize that this is what actually feeling good means, you know? It's like before you thought you were good, but you actually weren't, and it's like realizing that, oh, this is what being loved means, and I don't want to let this go. I want to stay here. And that's what the song is about, really.
Nice. And now let's go on to hear it. This is Brisita de Fe. All right, that was Brisita de Fe. That was great. Now, let's talk more about your producer, Jose Luis Pardo. He's done so many other albums for many Latin alternative greats out there. How did you get in touch with him?
He produced the band of the last two albums for Rawayana, which they're a really big band in Venezuela and Latin America. And he was also the guitar player for Los Amigos Invisibles and a founding member of the band. And they're this huge band in Latin America. He's no longer part of the band. He's just producing full time. And one day I was Rawayana, Los Amigos Invisibles, and for some reason, just like surfing the web, I landed on his website. And there was a button that says contact that I just clicked, and I sent him an email like, yo, I have this bunch of songs. I want to repeat. I don't know what I should do. And he loved it, and he responded, and I was like super excited. I didn't even think he was going to respond. And he responded, and I was super excited. He invited me to record this album, the song, and we ended up going there and recording a full album.
That's amazing how the internet connects people nowadays. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. Well, literally, like, I post Malone, he posted the song on SoundCloud, and in one day it was already blowing up. So it's like, that's the good thing about the internet right now and the platforms that they provide, like Spotify, and they allow musicians, independent musicians, to be as big as other musicians because everybody has access to the song in the same way. So I was lucky enough that when I posted my first album on Spotify, it did really well, and because Spotify liked it, and I was placing a couple playlists, and that way other people discovered my music, and that's kind of like how I've been growing as an artist as much as I have, but I've been growing a lot. So, and it's been a crazy ride, and it's been a surprise because, like I said, I just posted that album. I didn't really have a strategy. I was still in college. I was just studying and making music, and it ended up being a good thing. And so I think that's the beauty about it, about the internet and how it helped musicians get a fan base and get an audience.
Yeah, so have you noticed an increase of fan base when you released this album compared to when you released your first album?
Yeah, I think The thing about the first album is that when I released the first album, nobody knew who it was because it was my first album. But now I know that there are people that are discovering the first album through my second album, which is really cool because they're two different things and they kind of have two different styles. And maybe not everybody that liked the first album or is necessarily going to like the second one. But with this second one, I'm getting other people, you know, and new people that are enjoying the music, and they're going to find out more about who I am. If they realize that I have a first album, they go and check it out, and they like it too. So, yeah, that's the good thing about releasing music, man, that you never know what you're going to get.
I was reading that. Are you still in the University of Florida right now?
I graduated from the University of Florida on December last year, this last December. Yeah,
oh,
I did communications there.
Congratulations!
I'm a proud Florida Gator.
Congratulations! Now you're able to just go full throttle on music.
Yeah, that's the thing. I wanted to get it out of the way because I really enjoyed my time there. I still miss it sometimes. But yeah, now I'm like full throttle, and it's a double-edged sword, you know, because when I was in school, I was like, oh, I'm still in school. I kind of can do both. Now, if I really want to do it, I have to just go in and do it full on because it's a tough world, but it's a fun ride. Definitely a super fun ride.
Yeah, and just in time for your second album.
Yeah, it's been crazy.
That's awesome. Okay, now the last song that we're going to play here is going to be Semilla. Can you give me a little more info on how that song came about?
Semilla is the story of two people falling in love. I don't want to say it's a true story, but it's based on two events. So, and it's the most Latin song that I've ever done. I don't want to say it because I can't play salsa. I'm not really that good to play salsa. But it's an interpretation of a guy like me trying to do salsa in my own style, you know? I think the song is like, it's my attempt to be a Rubén Blades on the way the song is written, that it's like more of a narrative rather than like a personal thing. So yeah, this is Semilla, and it's a love story.
All right, thank you. Let's hear Semilla. All right, that was the last song, Semilla. A few more questions. Just, are you planning any tours? Are you going to travel here to Los Angeles and play a few shows?
I'm going to be playing in Miami on November 2nd. Then I'm going to be in New York on November 15th, and Boston the day before that on November 14th. And I'm planning, there's nothing done yet, but I really want to go to L.A. early in 2019. I've never been to the West Coast. And go to L.A., try In-N-Out Burger, maybe play a show.
Really? You've never been over here? That's crazy.
Never been to the West Coast, man. I've always wanted as a kid. I still kind of do. I used to skate and surf as a kid, and, like, California was, like, the place to go. And, yeah, I've never been there. I'm still kind of wishing that I could go next year.
Oh, you should. And do you have any idea of where you're going to play a show out here? That's still kind of up in the air, and you're kind of figuring
that's
it out.
Still up in the air. We're kind of talking to someone there, but we're not really sure. It's still very early in the process.
Gotcha. Oh, well, I really hope you can make it here, and then maybe you can play a couple songs right here in the studio.
I would love to, man. I would love to pop by the studio. Maybe we can have a conversation in the booth, and I can actually sing a couple songs. And yeah, I would love to do it, man. Whenever we have the show ready, and I'm sure I'm going to go there, I'll give you a call, and then we'll make that happen for sure, man.
Yeah, I'm already excited, even though it's, like, still up in the air. And just you saying that, I'm already like, oh, that's awesome. Because I saw that you played a show, what was it? He was, like, a stand-up comedian, and then you played his show in the middle of it.
Oh, I played George Hardy. He's a Venezuelan stand-up comedian, yeah. I played a couple of times there. He's like, he's very famous in Venezuela, and he's like, every Thursday he has a show here in Miami in this bar, in this theater called Flamingo Theater, and he does every Thursday, man, he fills that up, and he like invites like new talent to come and play in between the show, and I've been lucky enough to play him a couple of times, and he's great.
Yeah, that was a great performance, and he's really funny.
Yeah, he's funny. He's a funny guy.
Maybe you can bring him along or something.
He's probably already been there.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. He's L.A. is big for stand-up comedy, too. Well, hey, Simon, thank you for your time, and thank you for talking to me.
No, thank you, man. Thank you for the time, for the opportunity, for the space, and I'm very glad you like the album, and hopefully the guys that are listening also are enjoying the songs. And, yeah, just I invite you to check out the whole album if you're listening, and Spotify and all the platforms, and you can follow me on my social media. And, yeah, let's make that L.A. show happen.
Yeah, just for the people out there, what is your social media and where can people contact you?
It's Instagram and Twitter are at Simon Grossman, and my Facebook is just Simon Grossman. But yeah, I would invite you to check out my Instagram page. I post some funny things sometimes and some music and the info to my shows and my music. So yeah, I invite you to check it out.